just testing. Is this working? Wonderful. It's great to see you folks here this evening. Welcome. You've tuned in to Heart of Freedom. I'm Doug Pullen, and it's a pleasure to have this chance to share practice with you. So we can just be invited to be settled and comfy. And if there's any accoutrements or accommodations that are necessary or helpful to make this possible to kind of relax into a state of ease, please, blankets, pillows, whatever is helpful. It's just an invitation to let this be a sacred space that we create together to support each other in setting aside any preoccupations, cares, concerns from the day, and really just allowing ourselves to really deepen into being present. And if it's helpful in the service of that, to let your eyes close or just be gently downcast and to start with just to see what natural invitations for presence are arising. Maybe there's sensations of contact that let us know that there's a body that's sitting here in this moment. It's very simple. And perhaps there is the possibility of supporting our intention to be alert and awake by sitting in a posture that supports that. So some bodies maybe need to be lying down or reclined or supported by pillows. Some bodies maybe can sit in a way that's more alert and upright, which might make it a little easier to stay awake or alert. So you can check in with your body and see what works for you. Having an intention to make it deliberate and intentional. Sitting in a way that supports alertness actually makes it easier to find some ease and relaxation. And also taking a minute to just explore, letting our awareness sweep through the body to check in. Are there any places where there might be some, maybe it's just beneath consciousness and we bring a little curiosity and attention and we discover, oh, I'm holding my right shoulder more tightly than I need to and I can let it drop. Or my fist is a little clenched in my left hand. Just noticing. And just allowing things to be a little more at ease. And it might help also to take a long, slow, deep breath or two. Just let the breath invite that sense of ease and relaxation. Sense of ease and relaxation is foundational, really, for us to go deeper. So, just taking a moment to really check in, just allow things to soften. Connecting as if we deepen the breath, maybe it's easier to notice the sensations of breathing. And just a reminder that for some folks, and maybe this is true for you, it's helpful in the beginning of a sit to just take a moment and reflect on what we take refuge in. In the traditional refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, what does that really mean, practically speaking? So it could mean taking refuge in this capacity to be awake, which is our Buddha nature, to be present with non-judgmental awareness, to discover that. Or it could also mean taking refuge in what we can discover for ourselves to be true, taking refuge in the Dharma. And it also could mean taking refuge in our interbeing, in love, in understanding the importance of community, of connection, of the support that we provide each other when we come together to practice. So, yeah, with this breath, with this mindful breath, we can remember the breath is our point of connection to refuge, being present, with being awake, being present with the truth, being present with love, with our loving intention. And so it's just discovering where we find the breath in this moment. How does the breath express itself? And really just letting the breath breathe itself. Sometimes in practice, it's easy to stay present with the ever-changing flow of sensation and consciousness. And other times, it can be more challenging. And so having an object of focus or a primary focal point like the breath can be really useful. Useful because the breath helps us deepen into ease, invites relaxation, deepens concentration. And so being curious about what sensations of breathing are most noticeable. Where is it that we discover the breath in this moment? acceptance of this moment just as it is. And that includes the pleasant without clinging. It includes the unpleasant without resisting. And it includes the neutral or that which is yet to be determined, that often gets ignored. So there's room for everything. And in this mindful presence, non-conceptual, direct, experiential understanding of things, the felt sense of things, we directly experience how everything changes, which actually makes acceptance easier. Because whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, well, that's going to change, probably pretty soon. So just resting in this present moment, things change by themselves. And acceptance includes the acceptance of the impermanence of mindfulness. And as Rumi said in the poem, The Guest House, awareness comes sometimes as an unexpected visitor. It's so we can cultivate that with an intention to return when we get pulled in to the conditioned trance states, identification with thinking, with commentary, with judgments. And it's without judging or striving. It's more just noticing, oh, there's these thoughts or these feelings or mental states. And in the noticing, we become free. Not pushing away or clinging, but staying right here. This breath, these body sensations, this moment. This is where freedom is. your experience is one of ease and relative concentration, ability to stay with the breath, you can always expand or open to receive whatever the most predominant experience is in each successive moment of consciousness. The breath is like the touchstone or the present moment reference point that we can come back to that helps to establish that concentration and ease and present moment awareness. We can open also to what's called choiceless awareness, which is just here with what's the universe offering us in this moment. Maybe it's a sound or some other body sensation, or a thought floats across the screen of consciousness. And we can be fully present with whatever passes through. It's like the big sky of conscious awareness, being the awareness itself. We aren't impacted with whatever floats through it. It's just like clouds floating through, the clouds of feeling, the clouds of body sensation. Some stick around longer, others pass away very quickly. So here's the invitation to shift from being the pain in your left knee, or being the planning mind, to being the awareness, to being the spaciousness of the sky that just allows the constant stream of change to pass through. Yeah, and of course there's always the breath to go back to if you find yourself kind of getting adhered to whatever is passing through. If you find yourself jumping on board, there's always this breath to come back to. as we near the close of this meditation, I'm just inviting you to see if you can stay present with that sense of ease and be the spaciousness that is that state of love where there's room for everything, for the flow of change, stream of consciousness. Yeah, in this state, yeah, there's radical acceptance. This moment is like this. This breath, these body sensations, these thoughts, these feelings, nothing is excluded. And here are some words from the Buddha, from the Dhammapada, for our closing of this sit. So should you view this fleeting world, a star at dawn, a bubble in a stream, a flash of lightning in a summer cloud, a flickering lamp, a phantom and a dream. So, as the ever-changing flow of sensations and consciousness happens, we can notice the maybe desire to move or shift and see if it's possible to stay present, knowing, yeah, moving away from unpleasant, moving towards pleasant, of course. And we can be mindful, we can be present with body sensations, maybe notice intentions. Yeah. And working with that, or just staying present with that sense of ease. And in just a moment, I'm going to share some reminders and announcements so we can take our practice into listening and, yeah, reflecting. I just posted in the chat yeah, just a reminder about the practice of Dana. It doesn't really talk here about practicing the Dana in terms of volunteering or the kind of more universal generosity, but it includes that too. So, and also just, yeah, that our practice in our community is supported by giving in a way that brings joy. So yeah, this is just a reminder for that. And also, yeah, if you'd like to be on my contact list, there's my email address. And also, I've got most, or not all, but a lot of Dharma talks on my Podbean podcast. So you can go there and listen if you'd like. And then just a mention of a couple of things coming up at BIMC in the near future. There's a retreat on Saturday, December 2nd, just about a month out from 10 to 4, Shining the Light of the Dharma with Candle Summers. So that's coming up. And yeah, I guess that's about it as far as events go. So I'd like to give us a chance to check in, to hear if there's any sharing that would like to happen, an invitation to speak from the heart about what's most alive for us this evening. It's totally optional. And if you'd like to share, yeah, if you just say your name and, yeah, just a few words, and then when you're finished, to say, I'm finished, or I've spoken, so the next person could know that they could take a turn. So I'll start. My name is Doug, and I'm just feeling a real kind of warmth and wholeness of heart. It really is so really meaningful for me to be able to practice with you this evening. I've been feeling kind of alone today, and coming together with the group is really helping me remember, of course, that I'm not. So thank you. It feels really good to be here. Appreciate your presence. So I've spoken, and you're welcome to jump in.
Hi, this is Karen, and I am feeling warmth too this evening. I took my elderly mother to dinner after work, and she was pleasant and not filled with disdain for me, and through my wonderful practice, I can just forgive and love her. And for tonight, everything was lovely. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Adrian, and today I'm just definitely feeling a lot of gratitude in this satsang and sangha with you guys, and just having a space to, you know, just be present and do it with a group is, like, the connectedness is really awesome, so I appreciate you all. Thank you.
My name is Michelle. I'm grateful to hear about what's going on in the group and positive things. It's been a very deep time. My mom is in rehab, and she's going to go for surgery on Monday. And it's the third year of my dad's death, coming up on the fourth. So it's kind of a whirlwind, and it's just really good to hear about gratitude and people's emotions. You know what I mean? So that it lightens things up for me a bit. Appreciate my name. I'm just spoken.
My name is Mel, and I'm back after some time. So good to see you, Doug. And I was experiencing a headache today, so I was kind of noticing the kind of pushing away from it, you know, like aversion, and sitting in the practice, it was really sweet to feel just a settling into it. Like it didn't go away, but it was kind of like okay, this is headache time. And there was something about that was kind of like releasing. So really appreciated that. Thank you.
Hello, I'm James, and yeah, I had a kind of a rough weekend, but I always look forward to Thursday night and getting together with the Sangha and Doug's meditations and talks, so I'm really happy to be here. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Anne. And I kind of hesitate to share this, but I'm going to, because it's such a package for me. I lived in East Jerusalem and worked in the West Bank and Gaza the years of 1983 until 1990. And so as you might expect or imagine, the last 3 weeks has been very difficult for me. I just want to share I've been in Doug's basics of mindfulness class before this, before the Heart of Freedom. And so I have to thank you, Doug, with deep, deep gratitude for this evening. And I knew I wanted to join this Sangha as well. I have been in and out of the news cycle, deciding to titrate, like, do I want to know? Can I handle it? And the practices between the basics of mindfulness this evening and this sit that we just did, it's extraordinary to me the flow, the release, the invitation to embrace it all and sit and heal. And so I'm very, very grateful. I've spoken.
So, just holding space here to check and see, is there anybody just on the edge of wanting to share something? Okay, well, I'll start with a reflection, and I was doing some metta practice this week, loving kindness practice, and I remembered, I had a clear memory of the first time I did metta meditation. It was a long time ago, and my first teacher who was teaching it, her name was Kathleen, she said, so I'd like you to reflect on just the kind of the impermanent nature of a human life. How how fleeting it is, how things change quickly, and both for good and for ill. But there's certain things that we know are universal, and those things are birth, sickness, aging, death, being with those that we don't necessarily want to be with, not getting to be with those that we do, getting the things we don't necessarily want, and not getting the things we do. That's the definition of dukkha. And so remember that that's universal. And how could your heart not open when you really understand that, when you really get that? That, you know, there's joy. There's incredible delight. There's the pleasure of friendship. There's the pleasure of delighting in a good meal. There's the beautiful sunsets. There's the good friends that we get to connect with. All of those things, of course. And that's wonderful. That's part of those are all the joys of being human. And there's also the things we don't want. And and they're all connected to change. They're all connected to the universality of impermanence. So I decided to talk about impermanence in interwoven with how it can be a gateway to deepening our love and connection with ourselves and each other, because it's universal, because it breaks down the barriers that we build. And, you know, Kathleen was right when I reflected deeply. The person I was holding on to resentment towards, if I really remembered, they too are subject to these conditions. They too are going to experience sickness, aging, death, not getting what they want, getting what they don't want. There starts to be softening. There starts to be opening. So we're often sad and suffer a lot when things change. And, you know, for good reasons, we cling to the things we like, that we're used to, and tend to resist the things we don't know or don't like, yeah, or think we don't like. Sometimes the things that we think we don't like in anticipation, actually when we show up and are present for them, aren't the same as what we imagine them to be. So there's that difference or change. Sometimes change in impermanence actually has a positive side. You know, thanks to impermanence, everything is possible. Life itself is possible. I'm going to interweave bits of wisdom this evening from Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Zen master. I had a chance to sit on a retreat or practice on a retreat with him probably about 20 years ago. And it was an incredible experience. It was down at the University of Santa Barbara. There was some 1,500 people on the retreat. Incredible thing. But anyway, he said, life itself is only possible with impermanence. If a grain of corn is not impermanent, it can never be transformed into a stalk of corn. And if the stalk isn't impermanent, it can never provide us with the ear of corn we eat. if your daughter or son isn't impermanent, she, he, they can't grow up to become an adult. And then your grandchildren would never manifest. So when we can see the miracle of impermanence, our sadness passes when we see the flow of things. And he said impermanence should be understood in the context or the light of interbeing, of interconnectedness, because all things inter-are. They're constantly influencing each other. It's said that a butterfly's wings flapping on one side of the planet can affect the weather on the other side. Things can't stay the same because they're influenced by everything. Everything inter is. The Buddha said, this is because that is. And what does that mean, really? Well, everything influences everything else. It's all interconnected. So, that's part of why we can understand bits and pieces of karma, but to understand the whole thing is beyond human comprehension, because it's everything. Everything affects everything else, and it's all in flux. Understand change and impermanence with our intellect is, of course, possible. And if you went up and asked some stranger on the street, does everything change? Of course they'd say, yeah, everything changes. But from a dharmic perspective, that isn't true understanding. That's a conceptual frame, but it doesn't lead us to freedom, the freedom that the Buddha was talking about. It's only through direct experiential understanding, through actually being present for change, to actually bear witness to it in the present moment, that we find freedom. That's really where it comes from. And the Buddha emphasized the importance of that by describing three characteristics of existence. The three marks of existence are anicca, dukkha, and anatta. Anicca is what I'm focusing on this evening. Everything changes. Dukkha is what happens when we are in resistance or reaction to anicca. When we deny it, when we resist it, or when we cling to things that can't be clung to. And anatta is the sense of a separate self is also impermanent. It changes. Not that it doesn't exist. It just isn't a solid, enduring thing. There is a frame of reference, a history that we relate to, but it's in flux and changes too. Neuroscientists studying memory have discovered that what we remember is changed by our current emotional state. So even memory isn't solid and enduring. So there's that. Things change. And so when we create stories of judgment or shame or ridicule or whatever about self or others, it's setting up an illusory self that's solid and enduring, that doesn't really understand the fundamentals of the marks of existence. And then we create a lot of suffering because we judge something, ourselves or others, that really has no inherent solid enduring existence. So that can lead to love and acceptance, compassion. It's like, this isn't really true, the story of I'm a jerk. I might do jerky things sometimes. I might be unskillful. And there are times when I could be more mindful or caring, but there, this idea of an identity that's solid and enduring just doesn't hold up under scrutiny, really. The great modern philosopher and translator of Eastern philosophy, Alan Watts, said, "Nirvana is where you are, provided you don't object to it." In other words, change, and everything is change. Nothing can be held on to the degree that you go with a stream. You see, you are still, you're flowing with it. But to the degree that you resist the stream, then you notice that the current is rushing past you and fighting you. So swim with it, go with it, and then you're there, you're at rest. The momentum of our conditioning that would have us resisted is often thick, but can be relinquished. That's where we find freedom. Here's another take on it, in terms of what I would call wholeness of heart, or loving the whole thing, accepting the whole thing. And this is circling back to Thich Nhat Hanh, is that if you look deeply at a flower, at its freshness, at its beauty, you see that there is also compost in it, made of garbage. The gardener had the skill to transform this garbage into compost, and with this compost, she made a flower. The same thing is true with your happiness and sorrow. Sorrow, fear, depression are all kinds of garbage. You can practice in order to turn these bits of garbage into compost and then into flowers. And it's not only your love that is organic, it's also your hate. You shouldn't throw anything out. All you have to do is learn to transform garbage into flowers. So that's the good news of change. And we can influence how things change. We can't stop change, but we can go with it. And we can learn to dance with it or surf with it, and to turn the unwanted through the transformative power of mindfulness and compassion, loving kindness, into flowers. So it comes with this understanding that we can influence it through our attention, through the quality of attention that we bring, through a clear seeing. And to understanding, I mean, when I experience anxiety, it's interesting to notice that arises in the mind. And there is a mind that believes that it knows what the future is going to bring and doesn't like it or doesn't want it. There's an imagined future that it's against. And then to actually get there to that future experience and discover that it wasn't accurate often. Sometimes, it is true that it is unpleasant or difficult, but I could probably count on one hand the times when it's been as awful as the mind wanted to create it as. There's that quote from Mark Twain, who was writing his memoirs and reflecting on his life and saying, "As I reflect on my life, I think of all of those horrible, awful things that almost never happened." But we don't pay attention to that kind of thing. Our emotional brains are selective in what they remember and pay attention to. There's that, and just that understanding of don't know, and accepting it's almost like the mind wants to find security by thinking that it knows, but it doesn't actually know. And it causes a lot of suffering. But if I come back to the truth of a change and uncertainty, what I think I know is based on the past, projected into the future. That doesn't take into consideration all of those variables. Everything is changing. So is it useful to plan for the future? Sure. But let's not get attached to and believe the story that we can control it. So there's that. But I'm not trying to deny or minimize that it's scary to really embrace the truth of impermanence. Of course, yeah. To welcome the unknown is hard, and it takes courage and practice and support to be willing to do that, and practice really helps calming our nervous system with breathing, centering in the present. Bhikkhu Buddhadasa from Thailand said, "The truth of impermanence shines with the light of 10,000 suns, but we don't see." And it's partly due to what I'm talking about here, I think, that it's really hard for humans to really accept how utterly fleeting things are. There's a poem by Jennifer Wellwood that speaks to this. It's called The Dakini Speaks. "My friends, let's grow up. Let's stop pretending we don't know the deal here. Or if we truly haven't noticed, let's wake up and notice. Look. Everything that can be lost will be lost. It's simple. How could we have missed it for so long? Let's grieve our losses fully, like ripe human beings. But please, let's not be so shocked by them. Let's not act so betrayed, as though life had broken her secret promise to us. Impermanence is life's only promise to us. and she keeps it with ruthless impeccability. To a child, she seems cruel, but she is only wild, and her compassion exquisitely precise, brilliantly penetrating, luminous with truth. She strips away the unreal to show us the real. This is the true Rod. Let's give it to ourselves. Let's stop making deals for a safe passage. There isn't one anyway. And the cost is too high. We're not children anymore. The true human adult gives everything for what cannot be lost. Let's dance the wild dance of no hope. And there's a Toltec poem. It's very short. Our life is shorter than flowers. Then shall we mourn? No, we shall dance. Plant gardens, dress in colors, and teach our children to make the world more beautiful, because our life is shorter than flowers. And that's the exquisite beauty of embracing impermanence, is, and at least for me, where I end up with that, is things are so precious. The more I deeply understand it, the things that are so beautiful and fleeting are so precious. And that's what I get in return for not being in denial of it's like this. This is the way things are. The preciousness of trick-or-treaters at my door. And their smiling faces. We had four this year. And this is the first year in many years, so wasn't sure we'd ever see them again. And it's very sweet and very brief. And just to be there with the delight of that. And that's the way, you know, life is. We get those moments, those sweet moments of connection. And it's like the... most of you have heard the story of the monk who's being chased by the tiger. And I'll just share it here again. It's kind of a ritual. It really encapsulates this teaching. Chased by a tiger, running away, which isn't really necessarily the best thing to do with a big cat, but it wouldn't be the story without the monk running. So the monk runs and finds himself at the edge of a cliff. What to do? Well, fortunately, there's this thick vine that goes down over the edge of the cliff, so scampers down the vine and is hanging there and escapes the tiger, but looks down at the bottom of the cliff, and lo and behold, what's there? Another tiger. And then he looks up at the top of the vine, and there's a couple of little mice gnawing away on the vine. Uh-oh, this doesn't look good. And then looks over, and there's a beautiful ripe strawberry glistening in the sunlight, and reaches over and picks the strawberry. And enjoys every single bite. It's present. And that's the end of the story. We don't really know what happened from there. But life is like that. There's always tigers. And there's always strawberries. There's always these moments, precious moments. And that's what we get if we aren't totally trying to, and preoccupied with trying to control things we can't control. And so there's that. So to experience it, to be present with it, to understand it directly from our own experience. According to the Buddha, life is comparable to a river. It's like a progressive movement. It's a successive series of different moments joining together to give the impression of a continuous flow. It moves from cause to cause, to effect, from one point to another, one state of existence to another. The river of yesterday is not the same river as of today. And the river of this moment is not going to be the same river of the next moment. So life goes constantly changing. So sometimes in teaching, I refer to myself, instead of the verb dug, the verb dugging. And there's this sense of being the river that's flowing instead of a static thing that's defined by a skin encapsulated ego. It's more like there's this interchanging energy system. Or Dan Siegel, the psychiatrist who studied mindfulness, suggests that the human mind is an information and energy system in relationship. That we only know who we are by being in relationship with others, which is constantly in flux and change. So what can we do with this? Well, to notice the changing flow of things was one of the primary invitations for our practice. In fact, in our tradition, the Theravada Buddhist tradition, Vipassana translates into English as insight. Well, what is insight? Insight is into these three marks of existence. That's what insight is, to understand impermanence directly, to understand dukkha directly, to understand anicca directly. And those three are the direct penetrating insight of those is what leads to freedom. So insight is really the fruit of the practice. We practice so that we can experience insight. We tend to forget it. We tend to forget. Our brains tend to default in the direction of clinging and holding. So this evening I'd like to do a short little guided meditation here before we close, just for us to circle back and bring an intention of kindness and love to the experience of change. So if you want to let your eyes close and just notice, the experience in the present moment, the breath, the body sitting. And as you tune into some simple object like the breath, or it could be a sound or another body sensation, to notice how, as you attend to it, it's constantly changing. breath is constantly in flux. Nerve signals from the body are constantly sending signals to the brain, and then there's a brief, even when there's pain present, there's a signal send, and then there's a refraction or a reset, and then it's sending again. And here's an invitation to experience this impermanence, this change, as an invitation to let go into something bigger, to not resist or cling, but open up to our true nature. Which is loving presence, which is this quality of awareness that isn't what it is aware of, or is bigger than this pain or this sadness or even this joy or this boredom. Awareness of boredom isn't bored, and it can observe its transitory nature. It changes, and there's no identification with it. So just noticing what's present for you. Is it possible to hold it with, or be in this awareness, this state of awareness? There's room for everything. That's love. That's the state of loving presence. And of course, for most of us, that's fleeting. It comes and goes. And to recognize that that too is impermanent. So, just to circle back to maybe just centering in the breath, taking a few consecutive breaths. And then we'll transition. Because I didn't change the setting. There's the bell. With Zoom, in order for the sound of the bell to come through, you have to change it to live performance. Now I'm going back to regular, so there's that. So, I'm curious if there's anything you'd like to share, anything that came up for you, or any question about working mindfully with impermanence. I mean, there's almost an infinite variety of opportunities to be mindful of it. Anything you'd like to share?
Hey Doug, I'd like to give a quick share. So one thing that's come up during my practice is noticing I've been doing like a lot of like applied effort to my practice, sort of like with meditation, saying that you get for the perks of less anxiety, more insight, but I find it being like, I was listening to Trungpa Rinpoche talk about it as sort of like in an aggressive state, where it's like, it's just to sort of get a goodie rather than like be with the change, I guess, as it is. And I've been reflecting on that, and I find it as out of a state of fear that, like, if I don't put a lot of effort into it, then I won't receive, like, what I want, I guess. And, yeah, there's definitely a struggle in that. And, you know, Trungpa reflects that as, like, maybe more a better way of going about it is giving. It's giving yourself to this thing. And that kind of reflected on that too, is like giving, like I really like to be a father, and giving that to the present moment or the practice. And I guess one of my questions is like, how have you navigated that, and how much effort, or like I guess like how much change can you make in this practice? Because I feel like I try to stretch the envelope, and sometimes it like snaps back at me, where I feel like I haven't really gone anywhere. There's like depression, and like, oh man, I'm not doing this right, or I sense I'm not going anywhere. And so, like, you know, with like impermanence and reflecting on that, it's like there are changes, and there are changes that are being made, but I guess correct effort is something that escapes me.
Yeah, that's a great question. Appreciate that, Adrian. And I'll see if maybe I can respond to at least part of it, because there's a lot there. So I'll try to do my best with it. And I'll probably circle back and check and see how it landed for you. But, in essence, the practice is about letting go of any agenda, agenda of change. And mindfulness is free from commentary, judgment, decision making, goals, agendas, planning. The effort is really to bring the mind into the present moment and observe, to ultimately be the awareness that is able to observe change. And all of the wonderful benefits that accrue from this practice come essentially from that. So that's the effort, really. That it comes down to coming more and more fully into this moment, just as it is. And what we discover there, you know, sometimes is all of the objections to it, or the ideas about how it should be otherwise, or what I should be doing differently, or the judgment, but it's shifting out of identification with that commentary and the judgment and the story into observing. That changes everything. It's a radical transformation. So I'm just going to check back. Does that make any sense, what I just said?
Yeah, it does. That's one of the trying to practice as well. It's like I'm having a challenging time with, like, let's say work and coworkers and stuff, and there's a lot of reactivity in that. And I think one of the expectations that I have is like, okay, if I do such, then I'll receive such. But I get what you're saying, and that's not its purpose, is to like be present in the moment. And what I have been trying to practice is the RAIN acronym. and that's been helping me have like sort of a buffer and like seeing like a reactivity of a stimulant or whatever someone says and my response to that, and then just noticing what arises, being present with it instead of just reacting in like a, you know, frustrated sense of mind. And I've been playing with that. I feel like that's been sort of the work that I've been present with. I think I tend to stumble over myself when I feel like a hyperachievement sort of mentality at times. Mm. And so it's like, how can I get better at this? And it's, and also there's like kind of, like a meditation with the change aspect really was hidden too, because there's also insecurities with like relationships and like how can I be a better person. And you know, I think it's, yeah, learning to let go and embrace the change and allowing myself and trusting myself. I think that's enough. Trusting myself that I can get through this and like become more compassionate and mindful throughout all this. So yeah, it does make sense. Thank you.
True. Yeah. That's powerful practice to take it into the world, like you're saying. Yeah, that's really, and to use rain to work with difficult emotional states. Yeah, it's that really ties in because it's predicated on being mindful, and then if we can be present with our emotional states to find a kind of toehold there with whatever the emotion is and notice it in the body and what the thoughts are and really just allow it to be present, it changes by itself. We don't have to try and make a change. It just, and our relationship to it changes. Instead of I'm angry or, you know, I'm depressed or whatever, it shifts into, oh, there's the anger. That's how it arises. There's how it passes away, and that's what it's made up of. And, yeah, so, and I can see that you understand what I'm saying. Yeah, you've experienced that.
Yeah, I do, and I have. Like you mentioned before, it's a change that happens like as it comes and goes. Like I'm not the one changing it. And it's just reminding myself that aspect, because then I tend to like, you know, try to force things and it ends up stuff like not working out the way I want it to most of the time.
Yeah.
But I think just letting go and letting the change and just being aware of what's flowing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Thanks for the great question.
I just wanted to respond, Adrian. I know you said something about wanting to be a dad, and I know for myself, being a parent is such a good lesson in how the more I try to push, the less it works. The more I try to get my teenager to do what I want her to do, the more she decides to do whatever seems like the opposite to her. So parenting is such a good lesson in this learning that I really can't change a single thing, but I can share love her.
Yeah, thank you for that. Appreciate it.
I can see we've reached the end of our time, and so let's wrap things up here. And so just to circle back for just a touching in with some metta closing. So, yeah, just a hold space here for our own wishes of well-being. Like I was sharing at the beginning of the talk this evening, if we really understand the truth of impermanence in all of its different manifestations, how could our hearts not open, really? And really, yeah, just letting our hearts open to ourselves. We're all, you know, trying to do the best we can. And it's really hard sometimes. So wishing ourselves well, being a good friend to ourselves. And what would we say to ourselves, understanding the challenges that we face? What would those words be? Yeah, so just letting those kind of come through your mind. Yeah. What would you, yeah, say to yourself, knowing yourself, what you're struggling with right now? There would be words of kindness that a good friend would share. Letting those, echo through your being. And, yeah, maybe be repeated a few times. Yeah, noticing how that feels in your body to wish yourself well. Yeah. And then opening up there's this shared human experience that we're all going through, this adventure. And we know that those fundamental characteristics of a human life we all share. So wishing each other well, yeah, may you, we, yeah, here gathered this evening, remember our true nature, to connect with and understand that we are love in essence, that we can understand our inner being and our interconnectedness and bring compassion and love to ourselves and each other and extend that out into the world. There's so many places where our fellow human beings are struggling and suffering. War, famine, earthquakes, you name it. There's all different forms. May all beings everywhere remember, be held in the heart of compassion and loving kindness. And I'd like to invite us to close with chant. Very simple, may all beings be happy. And we'll do that three times, and then sa do, so be it, three times. You're welcome to unmute if you'd like to join me in that. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be happy. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Thank you, my friends. It's wonderful to be with you this evening. And please, if you take one thing from this evening, it would be to find the love in change. Sabbe sankhara anicca, said the Buddha. All conditioned things are impermanent. So too our gathering this evening. So take good care, and I hope to see you again next week.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. Have a good night.
Bye. Take care.
So good to see you, Doug.
Good to see you, too. Yeah, take care.
You too.
Bye.
Thanks.